Hi, Ariella. Thanks so much for joining me today. How are you? Welcome to New York.
Hi, David. It's great to be here with you. Thank
Great.
you so much. I'm very excited to be here.
So let's dive right into it. So earlier this week was the 1 year anniversary of the October 7th terror attack in Israel. And you're new to New York, and this obviously has been quite a year. What was your reaction, first of all, or of how New York commemorated or how New York really reacted to the anniversary? We obviously had remembrance and ceremonies, but then there was also, protests. So what was your take really on how what you saw here in New York?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, I am new to New York. I arrived roughly a month ago. I'm taking a few steps back, but when I arrived, I was a little bit surprised from, things that I saw here from protests, like anti-Israeli, anti-American protests. I saw, the videos of Jewish people being attacked, and I was kind of surprised. Because this is New York. This is not, a country where you don't have a Jewish population or a country where it's supposed to be dangerous for Jews. And it caught me, a little bit surpriser than what I thought. And so it started back then. And I can tell you that on October 7th, it was a very, very emotional day for all of us here. It was we came to the consulate and we felt it was just like very heavy. It was like all of us like walked here and very sad. Also, it was difficult for us to believe that it's been a year. It seemed like for us as if it was a year, like yesterday. I remember it. I was in Israel and when all of the October attack happened. And so for me, it's so, I still remember it as if it was to yesterday. And it was heartwarming for me to see all the commemorations here, all the ceremonies here. I saw, the articles in the newspapers, and I saw the Jewish community that is holding all the beautiful ceremonies, and I saw the rallies that were in support of Israel, and it was like very touching to see it. But on the same time, I was so surprised to see the audacity of those that decided to go and protest against Israel the same day that we had one of the worst thing that Israel has experienced. It's basically, I always say that it's equivalent to, murdering somebody, like literally going and murder somebody, and the anniversary of his death come and post how horrific or he was or things that are not even correct, but you like they chose to come and protest in the horrific day like that we ever had with while we're mourning. And remembering all of those that we lost, they chose that specific day to show their hate. It
And I
was
think,
just.
the one thing that's interesting about that, from a factual perspective, is that a lot of protesters, or the way it was sort of reported by, by some news organizations, was that these protesters, which really, they were really protesting Israel, that they were protesting the 1 year anniversary of October 7th. Even the language was used. And I think that's where you're sort of accurate. It's like, why are you choosing October 7th? It's almost like if you have a grievance with Israel, why are you choosing? And that's obviously using a euphemism, but if you have a grievance with Israel, why are you choosing October 7th to do that on the first anniversary, right? A lot of the protests were talking about Israel's, response, let's say, to the attacks, right? And that didn't even happen until several days or weeks afterwards, right? It's sort of similar to how I've spoken to a lot of your colleagues at the consulate, and they would say, well, on October 8th of 2023, last year, we already had protests outside the consulates, and it's outside the consulate. And it's like, what are you protesting? We hadn't even responded to the attack yet. So I think that what was so interesting to look at, like, why were these protests, right? But at the same time, you're saying, the audacity of a lot of these protesters. But I guess you had already been prepped a little bit because over the past year, we did see these protests start almost immediately afterwards the October 7th attack, you know?
Exactly. I think that one thing that we need to remember is that those protesters are against the Western like world. It's not really about Israel. There is a lot of protests that you can see that beside their hate to Israel, they burned the American flag, they called that to America. They are calling for intifada, they're calling to revolution, and those protesters are not really into what is happening in Israel necessarily. They're against the Western world. They're trying to destroy the Western world. They're not aiming just to Israel. That is just their excuse. And a lot of people are saying, that those protesters, they care about Palestinians. Why can't you care about Palestinians and still be human and care about Israelis? On
Exactly.
October 7th, we had 1,200 Israelis that murdered on the same day, the biggest attack, terror attack after September 11th. This is by far one of the largest, murder occurred. Why can't you acknowledge the pain and the suffering that the Israeli people had gone through on October 7th and say that you're sorry for their death, and you can also be sorry for the death of, Palestinians. At the end, every loss of life is, it's heartbreaking. We don't want Palestinians to die. We always say we don't have a fight with the Palestinian people. We don't have a fight with the Lebanese people. Our struggle, our combat is against those terrorists, the Hamas terrorists, the Hezbollah terrorists, those that are trying to destroy Israel. And so if you're here protesting against Israel because you think that what is happening to the Palestinians is heartbreaking, it's heartbreaking also for us, what is happening to the civilians and those that are not involved. But why do you have the double standards of, feeling sorry for everything that is happening to the Palestinians, but yet not acknowledging the suffering that the Israelis went through on October 7th? That was one of the horrific attacks ever. Children were beheaded. Women were raped in front of their husbands, in front of their children. The people were burned alive. It took us weeks to identify people. It was one of like the darkest times that we experienced. Why can't you, as a human being that cares about the suffer of others, why can't you acknowledge also the suffer of Israelis just because of the fact that they're Jews?
Exactly. I mean, this actually hits two questions I actually want to ask you. And it's interesting you say that. I mean, you can, of course, appreciate and be human and that there is, suffering, I guess, suffering with Palestinians. But of course, October 7th was a whole horrific attack on itself. And I think sort of, words have power. And even when you see these, protesters called pro-Palestinian, I think what that does is sort of a separate an us versus them thing. It's that you could be pro-Palestinian, but you can still have compassion for Israelis. You can see the horrors of October 7th. And I think a little bit of how it's covered, that it's always pro-Palestinian, and then like, oh, if it's pro-Palestinian, you can't show any compassion to Israelis. And that's how it's covered in the media. But I just want to get, and then, we're talking about and what you mentioned about, not, basically it's, anti-Jewish sentiments, right? Are a lot, do you think that a lot of these, anti-Israel protests, which a lot of them essentially are, whether or not they call them anti-Zionist protests, at the end of the day, though, are based on just anti-Semitism. It's just
Definitely.
anti-Jewish hatred. I mean, that's the bottom line.
Definitely. Otherwise, how can you explain the fact that all the criticism, all the demonstrations, everything that is happening is, you know, just against one state, one Jewish state in the world, and it's the state of Israel? There are so many wars happening right now around the world. Do you hear anybody protesting about them? Do you hear anybody, you know, walking in the street chanting, you know, death to those countries? Do you see the citizens of that, you know, those countries are being attacked on the streets of whatever country it is, just because of the origin of where they came from? And let me even, you know, specify it more.
And then where do you
have something against, let's say that you think that you have a problem against Israel. Going and attacking Jewish people that were born and raised in the United States or in France or in London, that shows you that it's strictly anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
And because it's not popular yet, you know, because of the Holocaust and other things that have happened, because it's not popular yet to be anti-Semitic, you know, publicly, even though recently we see that, you know, those anti-Semitics are not afraid, they're not ashamed, they say it out loud, they go with, you know, their hateful, you know, comments against Jews, but it's still not acceptable, okay? And that's why their method is to basically go against Israel and say, no, I don't have a problem with Jews, I just have a problem with Israel. And that's strictly anti-Semitism. And when you think about it, when you think about it like thoroughly, you understand that this problem is, you know, pure anti-Semitism, nothing else.
And I think in the diaspora, more Jewish people feel that because, like you said, you know, if you're born here in the United States, if you're born in France, if you're born in Britain or wherever, Canada, just these places in the diaspora, it's so much more focused on your identity just merely as a Jewish American, as a Jewish French person, right? It's different. So it must be different. You know, you probably see that a little bit here. So let me just go into that. So, you know, a lot of people, obviously, you know, hate is learned. We know that, right? So they've become anti-Semitic through whichever ways, whether it was media, their upbringing, their family. And of course, some leaders, whether it be here or in other diaspora countries, or, of course, the United Nations. We know many, you know, many leaders on the Security Council, they never mentioned Hamas. They haven't condemned the attack. You know, we see a lot of that here, right? So that's at the UN level. At the US federal and, of course, the state and municipal level here, we have seen more leaders, of course, you know, very supportive of Israel and all that. How do you feel? And, you know, just this morning, being, you know, Wednesday, President Biden had a phone call with Netanyahu, and Vice President Kamala Harris was on the phone. And, you know, so there's obviously that relationship here. You know, they just had that dialogue now. How do you feel that, you're coming here? So everyone knows, you've worked before in a diplomatic role in the United States for Israel. You were in Chicago in a previous role. How do you feel the U.S. leaders here are handling dealing with the anti-Semitism that you're seeing?
I can tell you that, you know, throughout the history, the partnership between the United States and Israel has always been strong. I'm proud to say that Israel is a bipartisan issue, which is what's supposed to be. We work, you know, excellent with all the parties, Democrats and Republicans alike. And this is something that would never change. We have a strong partnership. We have, the United States is our biggest ally. And when I was, again, you were right, I was in Chicago. I saw, we had the support of also the mayor and the governor. And also I can see it here, in New York with, also with the governor and the mayor as well. And I'm very proud, you know, to see that support, especially during this very, very difficult times.
Have you
And
met yet with a lot of the elected officials here? Obviously, there's some more local officials that are more, outspoken in their support. It doesn't mean that others aren't, right? But, we've people like Grace Meng, who's local. Richie Torres, obviously, is very, a very vocal supporter. Mayor Eric Adams has been, Governor Kathy Hochul. And, we've heard Biden and Kamala Harris and the other leaders. Trump, of course. Have you had meetings yet? I mean, you're only a month in, so I don't expect all these, but have you had a chance yet to meet with some of these people?
I have not. I did. I met the governor because she was here to, when we had, it was roughly a month ago when we had the six hostages that were executed. She came to the consulate to share her condolences, and that was such an important, support from her to come here to show her condolences and her standing with the state of Israel in that difficult time. So I did meet her. I met Richie Torres just like briefly, not really into meeting. It was one in one of the conferences that we had. As you said, I'm here only a month, so I still have so many people to meet, and I'm so excited to start meeting them. We did have, the UN Assembly and October 7th, so it was a little bit of, a stressful time, but I am very excited to meet all of those. And to be honest, David, I'm also very excited to meet those that are not necessarily of, public support of Israel, just to have a dialogue, because I truly believe that we need to have a dialogue. We need to be capable of having a dialogue, which is, again, something that if we take it to the protests that are happening here with all those radicals, this is one of the problems. They're not into like dialogues. They're into just, assaulting and violent and spreading, whatever it is that they believe in. And I sincerely believe that we should have a dialogue with everybody, with whoever is willing, of course, not forcing anybody, but we need to be able to have a dialogue.
Would you like to sit down sort of with some of those protesters who are kind of, on the other side and have a dialogue with them and explain the history, say, hey, this is what Zionism really means. This is the real history. You know what I mean? Get just to sort of explain a little bit and see where they're coming from.
Yes, so to be honest, when I was in Chicago, I met, with different groups from, all over the map, and also with those that not necessarily agree with whatever, with us. And I'm happy to sit with whoever wants to have a dialogue. That's the bottom line, because there are so many that are not willing to have a dialogue. They come just to, say whatever it is that they have to say. It is black and white for them, and there is only one truth, which is the brainwash that they went through. And those, it's impossible to have a dialogue. But if you are someone that is willing to hear and listen and ever have a dialogue, and you know what? At the end, you don't even have to agree with me if you don't think that what I'm saying and the facts that I'm giving you are enough. But if you're willing to have a dialogue, I'm willing to meet you. And to be honest, this is also to go to everything that is happening right now with all the misinformation. It's so sad to see that facts do not matter anymore. The truth doesn't matter anymore to young people. And this is so wrong. I mean, you have to check your facts. You have to make your research. You have to try to figure it out by yourself if whatever it is that you believe is actually the truth. And we're living in such a challenging time where it's just like following with the going with the flow, going with, whatever it is that it's trendy, and it doesn't matter if it's the truth or not. And this
Are
is
you
like hitting
shocked
on
about,
it.
sorry, I just wanted to say, because I know you've, are you shocked about what you're seeing sort of on the campuses? We're talking about young people. I mean, look at Columbia. It's, large Jewish student population residentially. It even has notable like Jewish communities like around there. I mean, are you surprised what's happening sort of at the campus there in particular?
I am very surprised from everything that is happening because those students, and I say those students because, as you mentioned, I was here before. I was 3 years in Chicago. And when I met students, I asked them, I said, why is it that you're protesting against Israel? Yeah. What is the reason? And a lot of them told me that they have no reason. They're just in support of their, you know, friends. They're in the university. They don't even know what is happening in Israel. They don't know the story of Israel. They don't know anything about the conflict, what created the conflict. They don't know that, you know, Israel was established in 48 and that we never initiated a war, that we just defended ourselves throughout the years over and over again. They don't know that, you know, that after every attack that we had against us was an attack and we never initiated, you know, an attack. They don't know the history. They don't know that, you know, Israel is the home of the Jewish, you know, people. I don't even go throughout the, you know, Bible, which is so far, you know, in history, which I don't expect them to know.
You don't need to go 2,000 years back.
Yeah, 3,000 years.
5,000 years, right? Yeah.
Exactly. But I'm talking about like 70 years, 80 years ago. And when I ask them, they say, no, we're just supporting our our fellow students.
Yeah.
They call it intersectionality.
Yes.
And they say we're the minority here, and so we're supporting our minority, you know, friends, and knowing that when we need them, they'll be there for us. And I asked, but okay, when you support them, don't you want to know what you're protesting against?
Exactly.
If is it the truth or not? And they said no, it's irrelevant. And another example that I have for you is that one time I went to speak in front of students in one of the largest universities in Chicago. And I stood there with one student, which had no clue that I am, you know, the Israeli diplomat that is coming. And he asked me, do you know when the Israeli diplomat is coming? And I said, no, I have no clue. And he goes, yeah, we'll be waiting to see who is, like, you know, this Israeli, knowing that he's expecting somebody different, like else. And when they, you know, when they invited me, I went to the stage and I saw his face and it was wide open.
You're leading to one of my next questions, but yes, I bet.
So that's like, this is one example of how there is so much misinformation
and misconception, and so, I think.
Yes, and lies. It's not even misinformation. It's lies that are being spread, and that too many people are not, you know, are not trying to check the facts and to see if those, you know, things that they're hearing are actually the truth or not.
The truth. Okay. All right. I have three more questions for you. I know your time is limited. Okay. So first of all, I want to get back to why that guy was surprised. That's an excellent question. So first of all, so, you know, we're talking about these protests. It's been a horrific year. We're still commemorating. When do you think we can get past that? Like, you know, you represent the state of Israel, you know, here for this, essentially the tri-state and, you know, a few other states, you know, we're New York focused. But what is next for Hamas in Gaza? What is next for Hezbollah in Lebanon? You know, Israel is defending itself. It's been proactive. It wants to quash these terror groups. You know, where do you think we'll be in 6 months from now, a year from now? Obviously, you don't have a crystal ball, but you're confident in Israel's ability, obviously, to destroy these terror groups, or just, you know, where do you see this going?
So I think that, I mean, it's something that we knew before, but I think that October 7th, you know, made it like even more clear that we cannot live alongside with Hamas. Mm-hmm. It's impossible. After October 7th and after, you know, the massacre and the atrocities that happened on October 7th, we realized that Hamas cannot stay no longer in Gaza. And this is actually, you know, one of the two goals of, you know, the war against Hamas. One is, you know, dismantling Hamas and making sure that they no longer have combat capabilities and their governing capabilities, but also, of course, the most important goal, which is bringing back our hostages, 101 hostages that are still held in captivity by Hamas for a year. I don't think that any of us thought that we will come to a time where it will be a year of them being in the dungeons of, the tunnels of Hamas underneath Gaza. We don't know, what is their situation? Are they alive? We're hoping that they are. And we saw how, we saw the reports about the six, hostages that were brutally murdered, executed. They came in such a horrific, like their bodies came in a horrific situation. We cannot allow October 7th to happen again. So there is no future to Hamas in Gaza. And again, it's very important to me to specify and to highlight the fact that we do not have a fight with the Palestinian people, with those that are seeking for peace, with those that want to live peacefully with Israel. Our war is with Hamas and their affiliates and those that are, doing the same thing that Hamas is doing, basically the terrorists that are in Gaza. And so I don't see any other result other than, making sure that Hamas is no longer in Gaza. And the same goes to, by the way, to Hezbollah. Hezbollah is the same situation. Hezbollah started attacking Israel since October 8th, a day after the worst, massacre that we had on the soil of Israel. And they started, shooting at us, even though we didn't have any conflict with them. They did it in support of the Palestinian, even though, the border was quiet. And so, and we know that, Hezbollah is always threatening the same thing, the same way as Hamas, to eliminate Israel, to make sure that, like, Israel is not existing anymore, and they're trying to invade, from Lebanon to Israel. And it's the same thing about, Hezbollah. We have to make sure that Hezbollah is going back to the, and basically, just making sure that they accept or keep the Resolution 1701, which is, was made by the UN. And they need to go behind the litany, and they have to go back because they came closer to the border with Israel, and they're destroying the north completely. The situation cannot stay the
I mean, if
way
they're
it is.
both backed by Iran, basically, and their Iran proxies, was it that surprising that they even attacked on October 8th in the sense, like, do they work in tandem a little bit? I mean, it's not that they're two totally disparate,
It wasn't a surprise because I think that everybody knows that they're a proxy of Iran. Same as, the same as Hamas, the same as the Houthis in Yemen. Well, we don't have any conflict, any border with the Houthis, and still, and yet they're shooting, missiles towards Israel. We know exactly who is giving them the orders.
Well, that's
It's
what I was
Iran. They're all proxies of Iran. Hezbollah, Hamas, the Houthis, the militias the militias in Iraq. They're all proxies of Iran. They're doing whatever it is that Iran is telling them. And we have to make sure that they are no longer a threat to Israel. And this is, I think, the only way that we can ensure that the safety of the state of Israel and its citizens.
Two more quick questions. All right. One, I want to go back really quickly to when you were speaking to the Chicago students, because that was one of my questions. So it's no surprise. So you're a woman of color, you're a black woman. That goes against a bit of the narrative, particularly of anti-Israel people, where it was almost like I bet the person that guy that you that student was expecting, a white Israeli, Ashkenazi man to kind of take the center stage, basically, right? So how do you feel? And I believe you may be the first woman of color to have this role in the New York consul elsewhere. How does that feel any different, any special for you? Do you feel it takes on a different significance or importance? Again, not just focusing on that, but how it does go against that narrative, because you really do see certain people, like writing about whether they consider themselves journalists or scholars, talking about this notion of like whiteness in Jewishness. You know what I mean? That's how they view it.
So, just like a small correction, I'm actually not the first, I am the first woman of color here, but there was a previous spokesperson, and he was a man of color. His name was Shimon, and he was a man of color. So, but to be honest, when I came here, it's funny because it's not an issue for me. It's not something that I highlight even because for me, it's not important. I live in Israel. There are 160,000 Ethiopians like me living in Israel. I'm no special. And they're like positioned in key they're in key positions. They are part of the Israeli society. But that's the thing that other people are not aware
Well,
of
that's what I was
that.
going to say. I think Jewish people know, you're familiar with that, but non-Jewish people in particular, I would be surprised. And maybe even Jewish people in America. You know what I mean? It's a big country. It's a big world, right? But
Yes, it is.
I think but yeah, do you think you may? Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, right? It's because I think it does challenge that sort of narrative that's out there a
It
bit.
is for sure. Because at the end, as you said, when I tell people first that I am from Israel, I see like how their faces are like changing, like with the surprise. And when I say that I'm an Israeli diplomat, it's like they're like you see that they're like they don't even understand, how can it be? And if you mention it, I have just, a short story actually from my move here. So when I moved here, I had few Israelis in my house helping me when the moving company came. And one of the movers, he said, "What language do you speak?" And we said Hebrew. And he goes, "You're from Israel?" And I said, "Yeah." And he goes, "I'm so surprised to see you, all of you here, like Israelis, you're four, and you're in like in different colors and shapes." And he actually said it, and I loved the fact that he said it because he was genuinely, he was surprised. And I said, "Yeah, like don't you know that Israel is one of the most diverse society in the world, the same as the United States?" And he goes, "No, I didn't know that because I've heard something completely different." And he goes, "But I look at you and I look at him and I look at him and you're all different and you're all from Israel." And I said, "Yeah, imagine yourself, then what more have you heard that might not be, accurate?" And he goes, "Wow, like you learn something every day." And so those like the fact that I come, the fact that, I look the way that I look, it's already kind of like it's a surprise to people, and it's already shows them that maybe the narrative that they, heard, the narrative that others that hate Israel are trying to embed is not correct. So I truly hope that that will be, kind of like the situation with people that I meet and not necessarily know about the existence of Ethiopians in Israel. And so that's like one of my hopes.
No, it's fascinating. All right. And finally, I have to ask you, so what we just celebrated Rosh Hashanah. We're in the midst of the holidays. Yom Kippur is coming up, all the holidays. What is your New Year greeting to Jewish New Yorkers and Jewish tri-state people and in your jurisdiction?
I wish everybody, first of all, a peaceful year. That's, I think that in the last year, this is one of the things that we were all wishing and praying for. So a peaceful year, a year of new beginnings and health and more tolerance to others and maybe, a year where people are trying first to check their facts, to, read and try to see situations from different angles. And so tolerance, peace, and health, and just, you know, just a better days. That's what I hope to.
That's a great New Year greeting, and I think we all need that, though. So that's incredible note. All right, Arielle, I want to thank you so much for joining us, and that's a really great note to end on. So I really appreciate your time on this.
Thank you so much, David.
All right, I look forward to talking to you again.
For sure.